This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest Match Report. I'm Mike and I'm your host today as we look back at a 2-0 victory away at holders of the wooden spoon elect, Sheffield United. Join myself, Hambo and Patrick, as we look back at the game and all things Palace this week, right after this.
The Match Report. Sponsored by Pitch Sport. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Alexa, play Back of the Nest podcast.
Playing Back of the Nest, CPFC podcast, from Amazon Music.
Back of the Nest, now on your Alexa device and Amazon Music.
Right, gents, so called today's pod, Two Deflections and As a Perfection, which I think sums up the game nicely. We do have another midweek game against Southampton, so we'll try and cover that as well, recognising that a lot of you probably hear this after that game. The preview guys will cover it in depth as well. We'll try and stay relevant, and we'll start by going over some Palace news for this week. So we'll hand to you, Patrick. Talk us through the 7-1 demolition of West Brom's under-18s. I know you watched it the other day.
It was a great performance. Fell behind early, but just in general, the under-18s have just shown a lot of resiliency the entire season. I'm sure you guys know there. As of this recording, we are in first place. The winner of our division will play Man United in the Premier League playoffs, and then that would team go to the UEFA Champions League. But they played really well. I mean, Paddy's done a great job with the kids. Very impressive players like David Omolabu, who's a slight striker. He's got 20 goals now in 19 matches, which is incredible at any level. Jez Rakzaki, who was a player that was on the bench versus Chelsea, has signed the contract. I love the way he plays. Reminds me a little bit of Wilf from a stature, but as a player, reminds me a lot of Eze, except he's left-footed. He actually said that he's actually spoken to Eze a few times and he's kind of modeled his game after Eze, which is a great to see in the future. Again, we fell behind 1-0 and just basically scored seven goals in, you know, in about 70 minutes, but played really, really well. An exciting young team. I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens in the future. As you guys, as everyone listening to this pod knows, I'm a big advocate of the academy, having grown up in the era of, you know, our greatest academy ever. You won the FA Youth Cup, you know, Vince Allaire, Kenny Sansom, Billy Gilbert, etc. So I'm hoping that it's not going to be a they go on and do really well and then we end up selling half of them off and the other ones don't make it to the first team. I'd like to see a couple of them make it to the first team. But just overall, it's been a really great season for the under-18s. I think Paddy's done a really good job with them and I'm looking forward to big futures for at least a couple of them.
Yeah, I was going to say, unfortunately, I didn't catch the game, but I've seen a fair amount of them, and it's really interesting the talent that's coming through, Patrick. I think, you know, you're right. You say a couple of them should make it, but excuse me. But as a team, they're a really impressive unit, aren't they? You know, the fact that they've played together for a while, they're really the first to properly benefit from the link up I think we had with Oasis School back in the day. They've really come through as a proper unit. But probably most impressively is, I think Teo Adaramola, the left back. It wasn't a name that people were talking about. Lots of people talking about Omolabu. And obviously Rakitić's come out of, almost nowhere after we got him from Chelsea and suddenly looks a hell of a prospect. But, when you think about Mitchell in the team and PVA potentially, hopefully moving on, we could have two academy left-backs next season vying for that place. How close do you think he might be to that first team?
There was plenty of people on Twitter that were saying they'd much rather watch the under-18 sides than our first team right now. So why not? A few people said about the left-back situation. We'll certainly wait and see on that. So the women's side, they finished their season with a really impressive 2-1 victory against Lewis, who, Lewis have been doing pretty well. They ended up 8 points better off than Palace after the 20-game season. So it's good to end on a high 2-1 victory. Amber Gaylor and Lizzie Waldy scored the winner after Lewis managed to equalise at the start of the second half. They've ended up with 20 points from 20 games. As Lee Nichols said in the interview she did with producer Sam, who's producing today, they think that really the only way that they're going to get more people to really start turning up to games, following them en masse even more than they are now, is by keeping proving themselves. And certainly the under-18s side are proving that, because people watch the game on Saturday morning in droves. Certain positives to take from the season, but still a lot to be done. Finishing seventh, but as we all know, finishing above Charlton. And then just a quick mention of the under-23s. The preview guys covered it a little bit, but into the playoffs with a 1-0 victory against Middlesbrough, who they managed to play twice in a week, which is odd. They must have racked up some miles there. But that's good to see. What's your guys' thought on the under-23s?
Well, I'll let Patrick jump in after me, because I'm sure he'll have a bit more to say about that and the youth systems in general. But that's been an interesting one, isn't it? Because the 23s, I wouldn't say they started the season particularly strongly. And they, more than any team, have to deal with the fact that a lot of the players go out on loan. They don't know kind of week to week whether or not they're going to get first teamers. So it's a really tough job. And Derry has done a fantastic job to really mould that into a team over the course of the season and get them playing well enough to, not only integrate some of the best of the 18s at different times. Omolabo stepped up a few times. I know Rakitić stepped up a few times. And for them to go on the way they have and get themselves into the playoffs is just phenomenal. It's not just about the talent we've got, in terms of on the pitch. It's the talent we've got off it. The managerial job done by both Paddy McCarthy and Sean Derry is pretty strong, because go back to last season. You've got to remember, this is the first year we've played at this level, at academy level. That's not an easy thing to do. And whilst at some degree we might be a bit of an unknown quantity, to sort of bring the team together, and let's not ignore it, play a much better brand of football than we see at first team level. There's plenty of risk there. There's plenty of attacking intent, and it's a joy to see, and tremendous to them.
Yeah, just to add to what Hambo was saying, I like the look of the 23s, but I actually think there's a little bit more talent in the under-18s. But players like Sean Spence, Alfie Matthews have done really well so far in the 23s. And he's right, Hambo's right, as far as, a lot of times you'll see, JP played, Jean-Philippe Mateta played in a couple of one under-23 games, scored a couple of goals, and Tompkins and Nathaniel Klein played in the first Middlesbrough game. So still a lot of the older players playing, but just overall, it's a decent squad. And then you got Rob Street, who's a forward who was out on loan and then came back and done pretty decent for the under-23. So again, credit to the academy coaches there, doing a good job there. And I like the look of it. And you just said it, for them to get to the playoffs in their first season in that category has been a good compliment for the club in general.
Just leave you with a sobering thought on that subject. The combined age of Paddy McCarthy and Sean Derry is only 6 years older than Hodgson on his own. So one other thing from the week. So the the minutes from the CPSV Trust meeting that was held a few days ago came online. A few things. The main thing was that WAEA are the shirt sponsor for next season. Still not entirely sure what they do, but you know they make more sense than Nutella did, I suppose. There's going to be three new kits next season, the same as this season, and apparently they're going to be announced with three separate releases online at the end of June through July. And the other thing of note that I took from the minutes, you know, there was plenty on the ESL, but next season, and this is a direct quote, there were no plans at this stage to open up the under-23s or the under-18s or the women's games to spectators. That's a bit of a shame, but hopefully that will change with the fluid nature of restrictions being lifted. Okay, and that will do for Palace news this week. Let's get on to the Sheffield United game. Might as well start with the lineup. Makes sense, doesn't it? So Schlupp and Townsend, both in the side. My question really, did this suit Tyrick Mitchell better? And just a mention on IU, so that's two benched appearances after apparently playing 12 games starting in a row. I'm not sure I can disagree with the choice to bench him. Schlupp and Townsend look like a pretty strong setup, and sort of how does this setup allow for expansive play, really? Andy Park wrote in to us very kindly on Twitter and said, why can't we play more expansive in our remaining games and see where it takes us? Let's assume that we did play fairly expansively against Sheffield United. Did the Schlupp Townsend experience work for you, gentlemen? Let's start with you, Patrick.
Yeah, absolutely for me. I just thought, again, I like IU, but he was playing way too much. Schlupp offers more, as does Townsend. I absolutely love the free role that Eze was given in this match. He was able to roam, pick up the ball, run at players. And I want to point out that as much as people like to talk about how Wolf is better as a winger because he's really to run at players, if you look at where Eze plays because he's more central, that's what we need him to play in order to really help Wolf and Benteke up front. I thought Eze was brilliant on Saturday because of the fact that he was able to have so much space. You see the run that he created for that first goal and obviously run for his own goal. The space that he created is better. So I just think this lineup was much better. I love having Mitchell back at left back. I'm not a PVA fan. I thought Kiyote and Cahill at times were a little ropey, but I thought Luca did a great job of screening the back four. And I think that role that he has where he knows he's going to stay there and do not much more is much better for us. And again, I thought that having Schlupp and Townsend out wide as those options to also run at players was great. So I thought the lineup was much more expansive. It frustrates me the way that Hodgson has refused to go with a more fluid lineup, but I'll give him credit for Saturday. Saturday's lineup was by far the best one I've seen in a long time. And even though we played a really, really poor Sheffield United side, I was glad to see that he made some changes.
So, that's a really sort of proactive way of looking at it. And I've got to be honest, personally, when I saw the lineup, when I saw that Gyro had been dropped for Jeffrey Schlupp, I thought it was the right decision to bring Schlupp into the team. But I expected him to play wide left. I expected a 4-4-2 because it's just what I'm used to. So my initial reaction was, yet again, what has Gyro done to be dropped? This is getting beyond the joke. But when I saw that, you know, Eze had lined up central, it started to make a bit more sense. And then I just ended up with the whole, why now? Why did it take until now to start? So first of all, let's cover the most important thing in that midfield, right? Okay, the most important thing in that midfield, Luca has taken a battering from Palace fans for a very long time. And it doesn't take a genius to work out that it's because he's better in a three-man midfield than a two. So if you're going to continue to persevere with him, giving him a deeper role, a screening role against in front of the back four and allowing two central midfielders ahead of him to be, we're using the word expansive, to be more expansive, that makes so much more sense. So why did it take until a game against bottom of the league, already relegated Sheffield United, for us to actually give it a go? Now, of course, you're sacrificing a little bit of will. Patrick's absolutely right. By putting him back out wide, yes, you get the excitement of him being potentially isolated against a fullback. But, you know, that's we'd also seen him get marked out of games on the flank. So it's not a great system unless you have a player like Eze playing the way he did. And I don't want to overstate it too much, but, you know, we only beat a relegated side, the worst side in the league, comfortably because of the performance of Eberechi Eze. Absolutely outstanding. And, you know, finally, Mike, to go back to your point about Mitchell, it's another why, isn't it? It's another why play a player out of contract who's not going to stay at the club, who frankly isn't as good as Tyrique Mitchell. Why play him? Because we've just seen Mitchell play two, you know, really strong games. He's a fantastic left back and a proper defender and links really well with Wilf down that left-hand side. So we didn't actually miss Eze being out on the left because Mitchell was able to get up. Now, again, I'm covering so many points in one go here, but let's not get over, you know, overexcited about the expansive play because we played a team who inexplicably didn't high press us. They sat off and let us be comfortable. And that's really the only reason that game was as good from us and as comfortable as it was from us. So, frankly, credit to the manager for making changes. Too little, too late. It's not changed my mind on him. And it just really emphasises a lot of the points that people have been making as they've watched Palace this year. Why aren't we doing different things? Why aren't we trying, you know, picking the right players, backing the people who are playing well instead of picking the favourites? All those things just come to a head. And it's only when the season's dead that we do them.
I mean, by the time you listen to this, you might well know that I'm wrong, but I'm willing to guess that he doesn't play this formation against Southampton because he decided he's only going to do it against the side that are 20th in the league. We'll see about that. I try and listen to the commentary rather than the your talk through, just so that I've got a different point when I'm on the pod with you, Hambo. And obviously, it means I miss DR's meltdowns and rantings, which is tragic, and you should all listen. But I think it was whoever was commentating for Sky mentioned that Mitchell absolutely suits the formation that they've gone with in that he isn't as expansive going forward. He's got Cahill telling him to stay back. I'm not sure if that's particularly true or not. I know he's cited Kouyaté in the past as the man that's grounded him, but it did seem to work. He got forward when he needed to, but he certainly didn't bomb forward unnecessarily, which worked when you've got a kind of diamond formation in the middle. So, it was great, but I look forward to it never being done again in Roy's reign. I wanted to bring up the fact that Mateta wasn't brought on. I mean, is it even worth worrying about it now for the rest of the season? Do you think he might just be thinking, you know what, I'm going to see the back of this manager and then see where I am in terms of favour? Or he's already at the stage where he's frustrated because what else does the man have to do?
I'll let Patrick speak more about this, I'm sure. But my perspective on it is pretty simple. It's that how often does Roy Hodgson actually play players that are bought for him? You know, he seems to have this way of operating, which is, you know, give him a taste, take him back out the side, give him another little taste here and there. And you know, what's he trying? Is he trying to convince Benteke to stay? Is that the game here? But, you know, he has the players that he trusts. But Mateta hasn't done anything wrong. Yeah. Scored a great goal against Brighton. Yeah. And ever since then, we haven't really seen enough of him. And I think he's a really talented player. And how do we really know whether or not he's a player we want to sign? You can see him in training. You can see him interact with the squad. How does he, you know, how does he integrate? That those sort of questions you can answer. But until he actually plays regular Premier League football, you know, how do we know whether we want to keep him or not? And that loan deal is for, you know, another year yet. And hopefully we'll get a manager at some point that will give him a proper shot.
Yeah, it's ridiculous at this point. I don't understand why. I don't care what the clause is as far as if he plays X amount of minutes or scores X amount of goals, he gets to play, or the clause for the transfer goes through. We have to see more of him. Now, as people who listen to the pod know, I've coached from U10 up to U23 level, and I've coached players who've played professionally. But in America, you know, we have a different rules as far as substitutions go. But when I used to coach, I always try to get players, you know, playing time. It gave them incentive to want to train harder and work harder and score goals later on. I don't understand this fixation that Hodgson has in not playing Mateta at all. I don't know why you can't give him 10, 15 minutes and end of matches and him to be, you know, incentivized to come out and want to play harder next time. I don't understand. I don't get it. I get Hambo's point about Benteke. It does kind of make sense if he wants to, you know, re-sign Benteke. But Benteke's now done really well. I think the stats are he's got 7 in 27. The most he's had, he had 6 in the last 71 matches. So he's already scoring a lot more goals. So at this point, Benteke's either going to stay or not stay. We've got 4 matches left. Let Mateta play. Seriously, let him play. Let's see what he's got. Because right now, having him on a bench is just so frustrating. It's got to be for me as a fan, you as fans, and also him. We've got to see more of Mateta. We have to.
I just hope he's got the mentality of Gyro, where he sat and while he wasn't playing, it didn't get to him. Let's hope he's a cool character. And let's see what happens at the end of the season. Right, I just want to bring up something about the defence before we get on to what most people were talking about, which was Wilf, well, other than Eze, obviously. So Klein's on his way back to fitness. You know, he's had some under 23 time. Two points I want to get you guys to discuss. Is Ward playing well enough to keep him out? And do we need to see Klein a little bit more before the end of the season for him to get another contract? I think he's already done enough, personally. It's not his fault he's injured. The other thing I wanted to bring up, John Fleck. Absolute bell end, yes or no? The man stamped on a Spurs player's head a mere 6 days before he looked like somebody had shot him when Joel Ward just gave him a hard tackle. So he was on my naughty list. Any comments about that, welcome. Hambo.
Well, I mean, on the John Fleck thing, I don't really know what to say about it. It you know, you can call it cynical. You can call it, you've just put John Fleck bellend question mark. And I think simply the answer is yes. Yes, he is. I actually think he's a half decent player. I remember him years ago because back in the day, I remember Robert Fleck, his uncle, was a decent striker. And I remember John Fleck coming through, recognising the surname when he played for Scotland schoolboys. I was watching schoolboy football at the time because Victor Moses was playing. So I watched a fair amount of that. And Fleck was a really good player at that point, but never really kicked on. So to see him playing Premier League football, kind of like, you know, I kind of liked that. I kind of liked the fact that I'd seen him play as a kid, thought he was really good, and eventually he made the Premier League. But you're quite right, he's a bell end. And whether or not I'd like him if he was one of our players, I don't know. But, I mean, and going back to Klein, I'll let Patrick say more about it. You know, for me, similar to yourself, Mike, really like Klein. For me, he's a better defender than Joel Ward is. I think Ward has played extremely well. I thought he was finished, but he's a reliable player to play at right back. But he still he's always had weaknesses in his game at the top level, and he still does. But, you know, he deserves a testimonial at Palace. Been a fantastic servant for us. But to me, Klein's the better player. But let's see what happens with Nathan Ferguson. The whole season out, you know, maybe he'll be fit for next year. We'll see.
Yeah, Hambo, that's the key for me, Nathan Ferguson. From what I'm hearing and seeing, he's going to be playing. I know he can play central defence, but we're going to play him at right back. You can't have Klein, Ward and Ferguson next season. So for me, you need to give Nathaniel Klein more playing time this season to see if he's worth a contract. If he's not, you don't re-sign him. And I love Nathaniel Klein. You have to stick with Ward and Ferguson for next season. So for me, the key is going to be, you know, how does Klein physically work out rest of the season? And from that point, you work out whether you're worth a contract. But we're obviously going to keep Ward. I believe he's already signed the new contract for next season. I would have gone with Klein and Ferguson, but Joel Ward has been a great servant for the club, deserves his testimonial, etc. So for next year, you can't have three right backs. So again, it's going to be probably next season, Ward and Ferguson.
Oh, that's some hard-nosed business decision in there, Patrick. Fair enough. Yeah, you're speaking to a man that wants Bolasie resigned. So, yeah, that would be a tragic shame. I absolutely love Nathaniel Klein. He'd made my favourite team, my favourite 11 when we'd done it back in lockdown. So let's just talk a little bit about shots and a little bit about Wilf. So my thought as I was watching the game, 21 shots on goal. What had changed? I mean, to be honest, it's probably the fact that it was Sheffield United. I don't know. I can't remember a time when a side had allowed us that much time and space. Like you said, there was no high press, whether they've just lost the will to live. But what struck me is that we have been incredibly good at scoring goals this season from very few chances. You know, I'd be surprised if we weren't up there in terms of conversion rate. So it felt the opposite of usual, having lots of shots and a lot of wasted chances. You know, Benteke could have had four. That was quite a shock. I was a bit surprised. And the other thing is, we apparently had 50.2% possession. So is that the first time this season we've actually won with more than half the possession of the ball? But yeah, a lot of it came from Wilf, obviously. I thought he had an up and down game, as I think most people did. There were some very harsh words said about him, people saying he's finished. And people wanted to talk about his attitude. And Mark Eagle9 just wrote on Twitter to ask us to discuss Wilf's moaning. I'll leave that to you two guys to talk through. A lot to dissect there. I'll let you go.
There's so much to talk about there. And again, I'll probably finish and hand over to Patrick to say more about the Wilf situation. But to sort of focus on the shots thing, you're absolutely right. What mainly changed and what I said earlier, it was a fact we're playing Sheffield United. Now, what I genuinely think is that Sheffield United allowed us to play how Roy wants us to play. First and foremost, you know, this is what he sets us up to do. Whatever system that he picks, it's to, you know, it's to play this way, to build up a head of steam, to create chances, you know, in exactly the way that we did in this game. But most teams have worked out how to stop us doing that. And Sheffield United, for whatever reason, they must have scouted us. They must have seen how bad we are when we're put under pressure. But if you give this team time on the ball and you give them confidence, we have the players to hurt teams. You think when you start listing them, and we've done it a few times this year, you start listing our attacking talent, it really is quite an intimidating group of players. And that's why most of us are so angry that we don't see decent football week in, week out. And you actually watch some of the football we played was excellent. There was some brilliant one-touch football at different times. At times we worked through Sheffield United so incredibly well when they had all sorts of players back. But, you know, we still created, as you say, 21 shots on goal. And just finally on that, and you talk about the number of missed chances. If you go back to the last time we talked about Palace missing lots of chances, is when we played a 4-3-3, 4-5-1 system. We don't miss too many chances under the 4-4-2 because we create so few, pretty much because it takes us quite a long while to get into a position to take those chances, right? But you stick us into a 4-3-3, the team plays better, the unit plays better, the football's better, but we don't convert the chances. And that all is the hallmark of the manager, unfortunately. But yeah, it was good to see the players more confident. And finally, on the Wilf situation, again, I won't say too much on it, other than to say that Wilf has always moaned. He's always been somebody on the pitch who wears his heart on his sleeve, as the cliche goes. But every top player has that attitude. Every top player wants to win more than anything. And for a top player like Wilfried Zaha to be playing in a Crystal Palace side that has declined under Roy Hodgson and stopped playing decent football, and he has to spend more time defending than attacking. And he's effectively, let's be honest, wasting his talent at times at Palace. It's a horrible thing for him to have to put up with, right? So if you don't want a player to be a human being and moan, that's on you. And finally, if you want to pick him out and ignore players with that level of talent in our club and in other clubs. I mean, look at Eze's face when he's not played well, when he gets substituted. Look at him going off the pitch, you know, with his bottom lip quivering and absolutely few. Do you want to pick him out? No, because he's not the target at the moment. And for some reason, Wilf is. And I find that absolutely abhorrent because he's our best ever homegrown player, in my view. And we are watching a player that will go down in Crystal Palace history as a legend. And we have people picking on him for the fact that he doesn't like to lose and he doesn't like to be kicked out of games. And for me, that's wrong.
Yeah, handball's nailed it. I wonder if any of the people who complain about Wilf have watched Jordan Ayew leave the pitch at any point. But I'm not having this Wilf slander. And I'm going to just pick up some points that handball really hit the nail on the head. But listen, he did an interview today. It's on the Palace website for Premier League production for the pre-match for tomorrow's game against Southampton. And he talks about how he hates to lose. And that's where his attitude comes from. People want to say it's moaning. He just hates to lose. I cannot imagine, and I've made this point on Twitter so many times, what it must be like for a player like Wilf to play under a manager like Roy Hodgson. He's got to be dying inside. The football is awful to watch. It's terrible. For a player who's exciting, who wants to win and wants to get on the ball, to have to defend so much and not see the ball, he's got to be so frustrated. That's why I want him to leave. I want Wilf Zaha to leave Palace so he can do greater things somewhere else. But for people to moan about him is amazing. I just don't get that. I honestly don't get it. People who do that must have an agenda against him, and that's fine. Have your agendas. I have an agenda against Hodgson. I mean, people have agendas. That's fine. But to get on Wilf's case, because he's playing in this side and doing his best. He's a top goal scorer. He puts a shift in all the time. Of late, I think he's injured. Maybe he's not, but he looks like he's injured to me, which is might be part of why he's not doing well. But to get on his attitude, we've known this about Wilf for 10 years now. I mean, come on, move on to another subject. But no, I'm not having any Wilf slander. And I mean, I'm not having it. But like I said, I want Wilf to move on. I can't imagine playing in this system, and he can do much better. And you know what? I'm a Wolf supporter, and always will be.
Now, bear with me on this. I used to have a Nissan Micra, a 1.4 petrol Nissan Micra, and there's a particular hill on the A21 where there's no way that this shitty little Nissan Micra would go above about 50 miles an hour. And when you just said about Wilf being injured, the frustration came to him. His face was the same as me as I tried to splutter my way up this hill on the A21. So if he's injured, then absolutely that could well be the reason. But what I wanted to bring up was people saying that his face was terrible when Eze had chances that he should have squared it off to Wilf, etc. And he was angry with Eze. There's no way that that's true. The words he said about Everici Eze he hasn't said about anyone since Bolasie. And it's just absolutely not true. You're taking two and two and making 29. So please, if you're one of those people, reassess your thoughts on Wilfried Zaha. You've seen him enough. You know. One other thing I wanted to say, you know, Benteke had some decent shots. There was some championing of him from Jonathan Benteke on Twitter. But I think I've come to the conclusion that the Jonathan Benteke account is actually not really Jonathan Benteke. And that was the real heartache that I felt from this week. Clearly, it's a Palace fan that's having us on. There's no way that Jonathan Benteke only pops up to talk about his brother, never talks about himself, and has 347 followers. So it's a crying shame. But anyone that's been duped by the Jonathan Benteke account, I think you'll find that it's actually not true. Right, before we cover Southampton preview, I just want to talk a little bit about our sponsor, Pitch Sport.
Back of the Nest, sponsored by Pitch Sport. Fun time videos, choose your match day squad, post match ratings, and much more. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
So you know by now, it's a great app. We talk about it every episode. If you haven't had a look recently, they've got a game called Foreplay on there, which is great. It's a bit like Super 6. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that because Sky might sue. But it's better in a way because each side is given a certain amount of points for a victory. So you're going to get less points for Man City against Sheffield United if Man City win than a team that you're taking a bit more of a punt on. Exactly like a proper bet. It's a really good prediction league. Obviously, it started mid-season. But get involved now and then we can start it properly for next season. It'll be a lot of fun. But also, you can review. You can review the games. You can put your review. You can say what you want the team to be. You can say what you think the score will be. You can talk about the games afterwards, what you thought of the managerial choices, player ratings, that kind of thing. If you'd like to be involved, you can follow Hambo on there with the code Hambo.
KUGKUT.
Yes. Or you can follow myself with the code ENEYDK. So yeah, Pitch Sport, there's plenty of Palace legends involved in it, some of which even are involved in the making of the app. So yes, get it if you haven't got it already. Right, Southampton, obviously, a game's popped up in the middle of the week. They had a decent run in the FA Cup until they were knocked out by Leicester. So our game from a few weeks ago was postponed until Tuesday evening. So they're 16th at the moment. For a side that earlier this season were top of the league, they sunk like a stone. In fairness, they've had some very tough games recently. I was about to say Spurs, maybe not Spurs, but they've just played Liverpool. They've lost to Leicester. They've played Leicester twice in a couple of weeks. They've had a tough old run, but they're there on 37 points below Brighton. And I think they're looking to bounce back and finish the season slightly on a high. I'm a little bit worried about this game. I don't know about you, gents. Let's start with Hambo.
Yeah, so it's a tough one, isn't it? They, as you say, they had a storming sort of part of the season. And, I'm a big fan of their manager, Hasenhüttl. He's a bit of a character. He's not, the kind of traditionally sort of, big name manager you expect at a Premier League club, but he always seems to turn it around when they have bad runs of form. And they've got some really talented players. And obviously, everybody hates James Ward-Prowse, but he's been superb for them and rightly got international recognition because, as a technical footballer, he is excellent. He's just a horrible human being, and I wish nothing but pain on him. So, but on the other side of it, they've been Danny Ings FC for a while as well, and when he plays, when he gets chances, they are a really dangerous side. So they've got lots of decent players. They've done pretty well, but to fall the way they have, I don't know really what the root cause of it is. I suppose Southampton fans would probably be able to tell you, and in amongst the kind of potentially negativity and all that, some of them might feel similar to the way we feel, that things might have gone that little bit stale under a manager who's been there for a long time, potentially, or they might just really be looking at key injuries to players at important times that have caused them to drop. But they're a strong side, and we're going to have to be decent to beat them. They're going to give us far more of a game than Sheffield United did, and they certainly won't lack any energy. And who they're going to target. They're going to target Wilf, and they'll probably give similar treatment to Eze if they've watched our last game.
Yeah, I'm looking at their previous eight fixtures. They've won one match in the last eight matches. They beat Burnley 3-2. I didn't realize they struggled so much. It's a side that was top of the league, I think, in November, December. I'm not looking forward to the match only because I'm afraid we're going to revert to type and give them too much respect. Go back to the old 4-4-2, PVA at left back. Maybe McCarthy midfield with Luca. I don't know. But we beat them the first match of the season. It was a very good win, looking back on it. I'm a little worried, like I said. I think Ings is still injured. If he's not playing, we'll have a better chance of winning. But as Hambo said, you have to worry about the irritant that is James Ward-Prowse. He'll wind Wilf up, because we know Wilf has been of late anyway. If they've been watching any of our matches of late, they will look to wind him up, which won't be good. But if we can stick with the 4-3-3, press them a little bit, take an early lead, I think we can get something out of the match. But I'm not looking forward to it. I'm not looking forward to any games that Hodgson's managing the rest of the season, honestly.
Well, I mean, they're going to look at the last four games as winnable. So ourselves at home, Fulham at home, Leeds at home, and then West Ham away. That'll be a tough one, but they could finish with a fairly respectable points total. So, as you say, they've had a dire run, and if they want to turn a corner, it's got to be now. So it's worrying for me. And similarly, it's probably on paper our easiest game to win before the end of the season. I mean, everyone's going to say Arsenal right now, aren't they? But Southampton, then Villa, Arsenal, and Liverpool. You'd think really it's our most winnable game. So a little bit of pressure on, perhaps. albeit we're mathematically safe. Presumably you're doing a watch along for the game, Hambo, if anyone's listening before this.
Absolutely right. Head to YouTube. Obviously we broadcast the watch along on Twitter and Facebook prior to kickoff. From kickoff, it's on YouTube alone. So subscribe to the Back of the Nest channel on YouTube. Plenty of other content on there as well. If you want your say after the game, DR runs some fan cams as well. They're always entertaining for one reason or another, and mainly it's DR's reactions to everything that causes the entertainment. We had a cat featuring in the last one. That was quite fun. So the cat who didn't agree with the talk about Benteke to Fenerbahce got very angry about that. So there's always something to watch there. And, you know, I think I'll be interested doing the watch along. You know, the things that I'll be looking for really are we going to make any real changes to that? You know, you're quite right to pick it out as our only winnable game, realistically, Mike, on paper. And then it makes me think, if we don't play, let's say, Mateta, we don't give him an opportunity in that game, do we then give him an opportunity against sides that we're going to struggle against? And, you know, he won't see much football, you know, at all, even if he's on the pitch for 90 minutes. So there's lots of things to think about with that game. And it'll be, I'm sure it'll be probably potentially our last real joy of the season. So do join us for that.
I've just got to bring people's attention to the fact that I was running the Twitter for the Sheffield United game live, and a gentleman contacted us to say he'd like to speak to DR, because DR had managed to persuade him on the watch along that he actually had personal connections to the owners at Sheffield United and could help get the young kid a trial. So I got to break his heart. So that's the kind of thing you can get from the watch along. And then, as you say, DR speaks to various Palace fans afterwards as well. Just to mention of the Arsenal game, the tickets, I think they've been going slow but steady. You know, people are still a little bit reticent about it. I was a little bit devastated to find out that despite how many points you've got, if you went to the Spurs game, you're bottom of the list for Friday. So let's see. I may well be watching that at home along with a lot of the rest of you. I mean, that's pretty much it for now. So on Wednesday, producer Sam, will it be Wednesday that the preview guys are back? So Sam's just made a who knows face at me. They'll be back before the game anyway against Villa with their usual irreverent Albert bashing and Watford references. In the meantime, catch us on all the usual socials. If you don't follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whichever of those is your poison, get involved. We run them all day, every day. And that's about it, really. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks to everyone that got in touch with questions and comments. Thank you to Hambo and Patrick and the long-suffering Sam for producing. Until the next pod, come on, you Palace.
Back of the Nest Review Show, sponsored by pitchdmm.com.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.